We're holding on page 130 in Shabbos, the last paragraph, Daf Kuf Lamed He, Amud Aleph. So it's middle of our Tzadik Ches. We're still talking about Bris Mila. So the Gemara starts discussing various cases where you have a suffix whether a Mila needs to be done. Among them being the case where a baby is born seemingly already circumcised. So he doesn't have an orla. So the question is, so what do we do then? So the Gemara mentions Amar Rav Shimon Elazar, Lenechaku Bishama Bishilo, Amnola Trumo, that Bishama and Bishilo do not disagree. Previously, the Gemara had brought a previous opinion that said that Bishama holds that in that case you need Hatafas Dam Bris, and Bishilo says you don't. So now Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that's not the machlokes. They both agree when a baby is born mohol shetzarich lahatif menu dam bris, you do have to extract some blood of bris of some. So what you do is you make a little cut in that area, and that way you have blood. We talked about yesterday. It actually had mentioned the point that blood is an essential component of the milah. In fact, for that reason, by the way, there's a clamp that they invented. Sometime some decades back that they proposed to use by brisim, and Rabbanim were very against that, among other things, because it prevents bleeding at all, and we see that bleeding is an essential component of the bris. Because that kind of thing is really a concealed orla. In other words, all it is so you have, it doesn't have, the baby doesn't have a normal orla, but all it means is, in other words, that the orla skin has gotten fused to the actual skin of the tip of the aver. So no question that there is some kind of orla there, and therefore you have to do a tophas dambris. The machlokas is only a ger who was circumcised back when he was a goy. For example, he was an Arab and they do circumcision, and now he's becoming a ger. So now there's no question that there's no orla there in the first place. So there you have Bishama saying that you need to do a tophas dambris, and Bishilul saying that not. This is one of those rare examples where the halacha ends up being like this shamay. We do have to do our tofes dam bris in that case. Okay. At the end of the perek, then it talks about the brachas for bris mila. Tanan abanan hamol omer, the moil makes the following bracha before the mitzvah, as usual. Before you do a mitzvah, you have to make a bracha on it. Asher kedushanim mitzvayse b'tzvanu al hamila. You have different opinions among the rishonim. What happens if the father himself is doing the bris mila? Is the nusach of the bracha any different? But anyway, this is the basic nusach is that you say al. The Rambam points out in Hilchos Brachos, among other things, you say al, where the mitzvah is not specifically on you, but rather you're doing it. In this case, the mitzvah is not specifically on the moyel more than any other yid. The mitzvah is on the father. So therefore, when the moyel is doing it, then he makes a bracha al hamil. Avia ben Omer, and then the father of the child says another bracha. Why are there two brachas? So in general, you don't have two brachas for one mitzvah. There's a good deal of discussion about that among Rishonim. One point is, in a different place in Gemara, the Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam that one idea is you want to show with that second bracha that you're doing the mitzvah as bris mila, rather than, for example, you have goyim do it for cultural reasons, or you might have you doing it as a magical rite or something like that. So you want to stress that you're doing it because it's bris shel Avraham Avinu. There's a sicha in Chelek Lamed, actually, where the Rebbe talks about the idea. On the one hand, the Rambam stresses in Pirush Mishnayos on Chulin that when it comes to mitzvahs that we receive before Matan Torah, such as Mila, we don't do them nowadays because they were given before Matan Torah. That, Gidan Nosha is another example, we do them because Hashem gave them at Har Sinai. And yet over here, we're making a point of saying a bracha, lach nisi b'brisa shalom avram avinu, and the Rambam throughout Hilchos Mila stresses that it's that bris. So the Rebbe discusses and develops the idea over there that Mila really has two components to it. It's a mitzvah like any other mitzvah among the 613 mitzvahs, but it's also the one that makes a person a full-fledged member of the Jewish people. And there is the importance of that we don't do the mitzvah because Hashem gave it to Avraham Avinu, but nevertheless, when we do that mitzvah, we are connecting with that bris that Hashem originally made with Avraham, and therefore you need that bracha as well. Everybody who's standing there says, "Kashem shenichnas the bris," just as the baby entered into the covenant, the bris mila, kach yichonis the Torah lachupa lamaisim tovim. So he should also enter into Torah, into chuppah, and into good deeds. One point is, by the way, that why are we putting chuppah before? Why are we putting chuppah before ma'asim tovim? After all, a boy becomes bar mitzvah and is of the age of ma'asim tovim before he goes into the chuppah. One point is, as some mafoshim point out, because after all, the Beis Din Shamayla only punishes a person beginning at 20. Meanwhile, the normal age to get married is 18. There is also something that they say there. There were various Iluyim in history, Rabbi Hillel Paracher being one of them, and there were other examples where they were married even before their bar mitzvah. So it was also like we're giving the kid a bracha, let him grow up to be one of those Iluyim where Itaka has Torah even before he's of the age of Mais and Torah. By the way, there's a medrash that mentions a whole story involving Rabbi Shimon ben Chalachta about a baby where there was a gzeirah in a shemayim that the baby wasn't going to survive, but they did the bris milah and they said this line, "Kashem shenifas the bris," and the result of that was that the gzeirah on the baby was ripped up and the baby went on to live a long, healthy life. So that's part of it. It's not just a nice wish. It's actually a tefillah for the health of the baby. Anyway. Then the one who says the brachas, nowadays we have somebody different, do it with Sandik Mu'umar, says the bracha, Asher Kiddush Yidid Mi Betem. Hashem made holy the Yidid from the womb. So who is Yidid? There are a lot of different explanations. Rashi says that refers to Yitzchak. He's called Yidid, which means the beloved one, because we find Hashem refers to him as Bincha Sichidcha Asher Ahavta. And he was made holy from the womb because to begin with, even before he was born, Hashem told Avraham he's going to be born, the Jewish people are going to descend from him, etc. So according to that, Yidid refers to Yitzchak. Tosfos brings that Rabbeinu Tam says that actually Yidid over here refers to Avraham Avinu, that he was already holy from the womb. And Tosfos explains that the three expressions in the bracha, Shekiddush Yidin Mibetan, Choyk B'She'erei Sam, and the Tzatzav Chosam B'Oys B'Ris Kodesh, refer respectively to the three others. Marsha says another point, Yidid can refer to the Jewish people collectively, that Hashem made the entire Jewish people holy from the womb. And then there's yet another explanation that the Oruch brings from Reb Shura Gaon that Yidid actually refers to Yaakov. So there's the various opinions who exactly it refers to. Anyway, so Hashem made Yidid holy from the womb. The Rashba brings over here, by the way, a famous idea that's brought by a number of other Rishonim as well, that according to Rashi's explanation that refers to Yitzchak, you have Hashem tells Avraham as Brisi Okim as Yitzchak, I will uphold my covenant with Yitzchak, and the word Okim is Rosh Tevis, Asher Kiddush Yidid Mi Betem. Anyway, So Hashem made something engraved into his flesh, which is the bris milah, which is engraved into the flesh. And that's Marsha points out. After all, most chukim are not on a person's body itself. Here you have it permanently with a person. So therefore, we recognize that by saying this expression, choyk b'she'erei sam. According to Tosfos, that part is referring to Yitzchak. The Tzatzav Chosam Ba'os Bris Kodesh, and his descendants after him, he sealed with the sign of the Holy Covenant, which Tosfos says that refers to Yaakov. Marsha says another point as well. We know that the one idea of why Taka did Hashem say that Bris Milah should be done on that part of the body. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim gives one reason of it. It helps weaken a person's desire for having relations. After all, a person Taka has to have that desire. Without that, they won't have children. But a person needs to be able to keep that under control, and Bris Milah helps with that. So therefore, that's why we're specifically calling it Ois Bris Kodesh, in the sense, as we know, whenever the Kedusha means the opposite of Erva. So therefore, so something that helps prevent Erva can be called Kodesh. Anyway, we continue the bracha. Al Kain, because of this, v'schar zois, for the reward of this, Keo Chai Chokenu, the living God, our portion, and Hagoyis Habach also adds, and we say, and we have in the Siddur, Surenu, our rock. Now, the next word, you have different opinions how to vocalize it, what nekudas it has. Siva or Tzabe. Siva would mean Hashem has commanded, l'hafzu yidus sheirenim shachas, to save our beloved flesh from the pit, meaning from Gehenim, that Hashem, so Tziva Lahatza would be in past tense, that we're saying because of this, because of the Schos of Bris Milah, Hashem has commanded that our beloved children, our beloved Jewish people, will not have to go into Gehenim. And Maharshal refers in that connection to the Gemara in Eruvin that says that Avraham Avinu stands by the doors of Gehenna, and any Yid who comes over there who has a bris milah, then Avraham won't let him into Gehenna. So therefore, in that sense, then Hashem has commanded that's how it should be. On the other hand, you have different poskim. The Rambam writes this way, and he explains in one of his Trubas. The Shach also on Shulchan Aruch says very strongly that it should be not siva in past tense, but save as an imperative. We're asking Hashem command Lahatzil to save Yedidus Sheirin and Mishachas. So according to that, it's asking Hashem that he should command that this should be the case. In our Siddur, the Alter Rebbe followed the older Nusach that the before the Shach, and that most other Rishonim, and not most, many other Rishonim and many other Siddurim have, which is Tziva in past tense, that we're thanking Hashem for doing that. Anyway, Laman Brisei Hashem B'Sareinu, for the sake of his covenant that he put in our flesh. And we finish off Baruch Ata Hashem Kodesh Abris, that Hashem has made the covenant with us Jewish people. So that's the bracha. Next, Hamolas Agerim, when a person is doing a bris milah on a ger, then the bracha is different. Again, so the first bracha is the same as you would have for a baby. But then whoever is making the second bracha, and in this case, it's not the father, of course, says a different bracha. Hashem has given us a mitzvah to circumcise gerim, and to make the blood of the bris drip from them. Why are we mentioning dam bris in connection with a ger, which we don't in connection with a baby? So there's a couple of explanations that we've shown him give. One of them is because, practically speaking, a ger, as we just said before, may often come to us already ready to become a ger, and he's already circumcised. Unlike with a baby that he should have, what we just said, that he's born gemalot and has an orla kvusha, is a very rare thing. Therefore, it's much more common in the case of a ger that we need to mention the concept of atofes dambris. The Baal HaMor gives another reason as well. He says, after all, a baby, when he's having a bris, he doesn't know what's going on, so he's not concerned over the fact that he's losing blood, but an adult is likely to be scared away by it. So therefore, we want to highlight in the bracha the fact that this person has the courage to do this, even though he's going to be losing blood. Nevertheless, he's willing to go through with it, and therefore we highlight that in the bracha. Anyway, we continue. If it weren't for the blood of the covenant, the bris milah, the heavens and earth wouldn't exist. As the pasuk says, if it weren't for my covenant by day and by night, which refers to bris milah, because again, it's the only mitzvah that a person has with him 24/7. I wouldn't have set up the laws of heaven and earth. So we see that the whole heaven and earth exists because of the mitzvah of bris milah. Marshon, a different Marshon, refers over here to something that he explains in Nedarim. He says, in that case, you know, we have in Pirkei Avos, and we just said in Pirkei Avos, the Shabbos, al shlosh dvarim olam kayim al din v'ala emes v'ala shalom. So why don't we list bris milah as well? And he says, because the vote is, they were focusing on things that are benodim l'chaveiro. And they were focusing on things because of which the world, society continues to exist because of them. Here we're talking about the world would never have been created in the first place if it hadn't been for the mitzvah of bris milah. And we finish off Baruch Ata Hashem Kodesh Abris. Next, Hamolas Avodim, when a person does a bris milah for an eved knani, so it's similar. Oimer Asher Kedushanim Mitzvayisav Zon Ala Milah, Vamavarech Oimer Asher Kedushanim Mitzvayisav Zon Ala Avodim. So instead of saying Mamolas Agerin, because here this guy is not a ger, he's an eved, so Hashem gave us a mitzvah to circumcise Avodim, Olahatif Mam Dam Bris, and we continue the same way. Sure, Molly Dam Bris, Chokas Shemaim Va'Oetzle Niskaimu, Shenemim Loy Bris Yem Valai, Chokas Shemaim Va'Oetzle Samti, Baruch Hashem Kodesh Abris. So there are different poskim who discuss that. On the one hand, yeah, it's a mitzvah that comes mizman lizman. We should say shech yonu on it. Befrak, we said before earlier in the perek that you do the mitzvah besimcha. On the other hand, there is the tsar that the baby is suffering pain, or the ger or the eved, as the case may be, is suffering pain, and therefore we shouldn't. Lamaisa, you have lamaisa. The sfaradim do say shech yonu. Ashkenazim in chutz laaretz at least don't, and as I understand that Ashkenazim in Eretz Yisrael follow the sfaradim minhag, and they do. Okay. Next, Toilim Perek Esrim. From here, basically until the end of the Masechta, it's dealing with a number of different miscellaneous dinim of Shabbos, many of which are Dirabbanon, Many of which are Derabanan, many of them actually feature these days. We're learning in Shloisha Prakim of Rambam, we're learning Hilchos Shabbos, many of them feature over there. In general, with things Derabanan, you have a number of different ones. You have ones that are too similar to a Malacha Daraisa. Then the flip side is you have ones that, even though they're somewhat similar, the Chachamim allowed them for one reason or another. And then you have ones that are the Shalo Yasek, Derech Shu Oise B'Choil, you don't want that a person should do on Shabbos like he does on weekdays, and he may actually come to do an actual Malacha. So as the last few prakim over here deal with such things, this parak, much of it deals with dinim as far as as far as squeezing or straining liquids and things like that. So in this connection, the Gemara brings that they asked one of the Chachamim to tell over some teachings of Torah that Rav Huna had said over in the name of Rab, two teachings on Hilchos Shabbos, which are relevant to this perek, because it starts talking at one point in this perek about various dinim of making an oil arai on Shabbos, making a temporary tent or something like that. And then also tell us over something that he said from in Rab's name, having to do with the halacha, having to do with Torah, having to do with what's going to happen to Torah in the future. So Omar Rav, so he quoted that Rav said, "Asida Torah shetishtakach miYisrael." In the future, the Torah is going to be forgotten by the Jewish people. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in the Torah, "V'hifla Hashem as makoyska." Hashem will make your blows wondrous. Now, haflazu any yadei mahi. When you say that they're going to be wondrous, what does that mean? But we have a different pasuk from Yeshaya warning the Jewish people, Lochain, because of the averus that they've been doing, as described in the pasukim before that. Hinini Yosef lahafli, asa'amazeh hafli rafela. Hashem says, I am going to make amazing, I'm going to bring amazing punishments on the Jewish people. V'avda chochmas chachamav, and the wisdom of his wise ones will be lost. Uvinas nevoin of tistater, and the understanding of his understanding ones will be hidden away. Then we understand that hevi yamah, flaws of Torah, therefore we understand that the v'hifla Hashem es makoscha, which is the same shortage as hafli rafela in this pasuk, means that Torah is going to be forgotten. Which Marshar explains that if we only had the pasuk in Chumash, then we might eventually understand that it means forgetting Torah, but we would only know that one aspect of Torah is going to be forgotten. When the Navi says, when Yeshaya says haflev afela, means that both nigla and nister of Torah are both going to be hidden. That's the chochmas chachamav. Refers to nigla, that people are not going to know the ins and outs of nigla of Torah, and uvinas nevonim nistato, it's going to be hidden away, the ability to know nister, the ability to know the hidden parts of the Torah. So the Gemara continues Tanara in this further on this topic. Tanara ban k'nichnasu rabbeinu l'kerem b'yavna, when the Chachamim entered Kerem b'yavna, which is the yeshiva in Yavna. They called it Kerem, Rashi explains here and other places in Shas. They used to sit there in rows like a vineyard, and therefore they called it Kerem B'Yavna. I once saw somebody said an interesting vortan, and I don't remember who, might have been Reb Reuven Margolius, but I don't remember. Anyway, says that so what? Don't they usually sit in every base medrash? They sit like that? And he says no, because before that, when the Sanhedrin had been in Lushkas Agozis, and afterwards Bepashtus and the other places where they'd been around Yerushalayim, then they used to sit in a semicircle. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that they're supposed to sit in a semicircle so all of them can see each other. But now that they regathered in Yavne, they first of all, they want to demonstrate it's not the actual Sanhedrin anymore. It's just a different era in Jewish history. Second of all, they don't want the Romans to start suspecting that they're putting back together the Sanhedrin, and the Romans are going to persecute them for it. So therefore, they would dafka sit in straight rows, and therefore it became called Kerem B'Yavne. Anyway. So when the Chachamim came in there, Omru, they said the same thing. I see the Torah shetishtakach miYisrael. In the future, the Torah is going to be forgotten from among the Jewish people. And this braisa that we're quoting is actually the beginning of the Tesefta on Masechta Edius. So Masechta Edius deals with various miscellaneous halachas that the Chachamim were concerned were going to be forgotten. So, for example, Adius contains, let's say, we know usually Bishama is Machmer and Bishil is Makel. So Adius contains all the examples where Bishama is Makel and Bishil is Machmer. and all the ones where Shammai and Hillel themselves argued, which is a very rare thing. Usually it's Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel and various other things like that. So these are things the Chachamim were concerned that these are going to be forgotten, and therefore they introduced their work of gathering it together with this point that we're saying over here, that the Torah is going to be forgotten, and therefore we have to make efforts to preserve it by gathering together what everybody knows and having everybody come and give Eidus, which is why it's called Masechta Eidus, on what they know, what they've learned from their Rebbeim, and make sure that it's all arranged in an order that people won't forget it. So Shenemar, so they say, because the Pasuk says, Hine yamim boim ne'um Hashem alekim, days are yet going to come, says Hashem, v'yishlachti ra'av ba'aretz, I'll send a famine into the land, lo'y ra'av la'lechem, it won't be a hunger, it won't be a famine for bread, v'lo'y tzom alamayim, it won't be a thirst that people are going to be short of water, kiyim l'shmoyas, divrei Hashem, there's going to be a famine, and there's going to be a hunger and a thirst for to hear the words of Hashem, which refers to Torah. And the next pasuk continues. The Naomi Yom Ad Yom. They're going to wander from sea to sea. Umitzaf and Vad Mizrach. They're going to wander from north to east in all different directions. Yeshotetu. They're going to be circling around. They're going to be wandering around. Levakish is Dvar Hashem, to seek the word of Hashem. V'lo yimtso, and they won't find it. So therefore, the Chachamim are now saying, when we're gathering in Yavne, this was right after the Churban, we have to, right now, that time is beginning to come true, and therefore we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. So what does it mean, Dvar Havah? What does it mean, Dvar Hashem, when it says that people are going to want to hear the word of Hashem? So it means several things. Dvar Hashem zu halacha. First of all, it refers to halacha. The actual halachas of what you have to do. Rashi says, after all, we have that Moshe describes when he talks about how he was telling the Aseres Hadibris to the Jewish people, which are basic halachas of what to do and what not to do. He uses the word Dvar Hashem to refer to it. Also, Dvar Hashem zu haketz. The word Dvar Hashem also refers to the ketz, when the end of the golos is going to be. Rashi says, I don't know where we find that the ketz refers to Dvar Hashem. Is referred to as Dvar Hashem. Tosfos says you find the ketz of the Golus Bavel is described at the beginning of Sefer Ezra with the words Lechloi, and also at the end of Divrei Hayomim with the words Lechloi Dvar Hashem.
We're taking time now.
Please keep yourself on mute unless you have a question to ask. Thank you. So therefore we see that the word Dvar Hashem refers to the ketz, to the end of Golus. And Dvar Hashem, Zu Nevuah, and the word Dvar Hashem also refers to Nevuah. So people are going to be looking for all those things, for Halacha, and for Nevuah, and for the Ketz, and they're not going to be able to find them. The Maharal has a very interesting explanation in his Sefer Tiferes Yisrael. He explains that these three things, Halacha, Nevuah, and Ketz, refer to the three parts of Tanakh. The Chumash, the Torah, is Halacha. It's what tells us what to do and what not to do. Nevi'im is Nevuah. And Ksuvim in general includes the Ketz. Specifically, you have in Ksuvim, you have Sefer Daniel, which talks much more about the Ketz than any other. But he says all the Sfarim of Ksuvim in general have something about the Ketz in them. He explains on that basis, there's a Gemara in Megillah that tells us that Yonas and Benaziel, having translated Nevi'im, wanted to translate Ksuvim as well. And Basco came and said, don't do that, because then you're going to end up revealing when the Ketz is. So we're on the face of it, so what's the problem? Let him translate all the other 10 Sfarim all the other 10 Sfarim of Ksuvim and not Daniel. But the answer is every one of them, the Maharal says, has something to do with the Ketz. Anyway, so therefore people are going to be looking for understanding in all those three areas of Torah, and they're not going to be able to find it. Umay Yeshotetu Levakash as Dvar Hashem. So what does the last part of the Pasuk mean when it says they're going to be wandering around to look for the word of Hashem? Omru, so they said, there's going to come a time, Asida Isha Shatito Kikar Shal Truma, there's going to come a time when a woman is going to take a loaf of bread of Truma, the Tachsu, Babata Knesias, Babata Medrashis, and she's going to be circling around among all the shuls and all the Bata Medrash to ask, Leidem Tmeyahim Tahori, to know whether this loaf of bread is Tomei or Tahar, the Ain Mavin, and nobody's going to be able to understand, nobody's going to be able to give her a clear answer. In that same place, the Maharal explains, when you think of it, there are four things that make it difficult for a person to learn Torah. You have where they're not really suited for it, where their brain is not of the caliber for it, where it's a difficult topic, where it's been, where we're in Golus among the Goyim, and where it's hard for a person to find Parnassah. So he says, you have all four of these things implied in this over here. We're saying Asida, it's going to be in the future, meaning after a long and searing Golus. there's going to be there's going to be an Isha, a woman who has less of a knowledge of Torah, so she has a more difficult time understanding it. She's going to be taking a loaf of bread of truma, which things of truma v'tara and things of truma and kodshim are much more complicated than the other parts of Torah. So therefore, it's going to be hard to know. And why is she taking this loaf of bread? Why doesn't she just say, okay, I'm not sure whether it's tumah. I'll throw it out to be on the safe side, because people are going to be having such a difficult time making parnasa, they can't afford to throw out a loaf of bread. So therefore, so you have all those four factors involved over here. And nobody's going to be able to give her a straight answer. But the Gemara asks, why ever not? What do you mean? Is the question going to be whether it's Tomei or Tahar? The Pasuk clearly says that food is able to be Makabel Tumah. No matter how much we're saying that Jews may forget Torah, they're not going to forget something that says Befedosh and Chumash. So Ella, so you're right, the Gemara says, Leidem Rishonahivim Shnei. She's going to want to ask, is it a Rishon Latruma or is it a Shein Latruma? Ve'en Maven, and nobody's going to be able to explain. Like when I ask Honami Masnisin hi chola v'chola, that also is a clear Mishnah, and we don't expect, no matter how much we say there might be a forgetting of Torah, they're not going to forget clear halachas that are established in Mishnayos, and the Gemara goes on with a whole halachic analysis of it, of exactly what the question is going to be. But the point is, there's going to be some kind of question about the status of this bread, where there's going to come a time when nobody's going to be able to answer it. Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, by the way, as a practical matter, I mean, nowadays we don't have Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara anyway. No one would ever come around with a question on a loaf of bread, whether it's Tumah or Tahar, because regardless, Tumah or Tahar, we're going to be eating it anyhow. So he explains this would have been apparently during the first couple of centuries after the Churban, they still had Parah Adumah ashes left over, and they were able to continue keeping the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. But nevertheless, there had been such confusion in Jewish life with all the gullus and persecutions and all of that, that there must have come some point when something like this happened. However, the Gemara continues, Tanya, Reb Shimon Yechoyom, Chas V'Shalom, Teshtakach Torah Mi'Yisrael. Chas V'Shalom, that the Torah will ever be forgotten by the Jewish people, like we've been saying all along. Shenema, Kilos Yishachach Mepizaroi. The Pasuk says the Torah will never be forgotten by their descendants, by the Jewish people. So Elamani Makaim Yeshotu Lavakash is Dvar Hashem Veloyim So. So what does that pasuk mean, that people are going to wander around to look for Dvar Hashem and they're not going to find it? And we said before that Dvar Hashem includes halacha. It means Shaloyim Su Halacha Bruru Mishnah Bruru Makamechad. They're not going to be able to find a clear halacha where there's no machlokas in it, or a clear Mishnah in any one place. So in other words, they're going to go from one place to another, and they're going to find wherever they go, they're going to find those machlokas on every Mishnah and on every halacha. But that the Torah should be forgotten altogether, says Rav Shimon, Chas V'Shalom, that could ever happen. In that place, in Tiferes Yisrael, the Maharal goes on to explain. So what Rav Shimon is saying is, look, the Torah is, he calls it the Tzura, like the Neshama of the Jewish people. So as long as there's a Jewish people, there's going to be a Torah. Therefore, what it means is, though, because in Golus, we are scattered all over and fragmented all over, therefore, the result is the Torah, which is our Tzura, is also going to be scattered and fragmented all over, and there's not going to be any one place where you can learn it clearly and distinctly. But nevertheless, it will still continue to exist, just like we Jewish people continue to exist. Continues the Gemara. Tanya Rab Yosi ben Elisha Omer, Imra Isab Dursh at Tsaris Rabbis Bois Olav, if you see a generation with tremendous tsaris are coming upon them, say of Doit Dayone Yisrael, go check out what's going on with the Dayonim of the Jewish people. Shakol Pur Onus, Shabala Olam Lai Ba Elabishvil Dayone Yisrael. Any punishment that comes to the world is that it comes only because of the Dayonim who are not doing their job properly. Shenemar, as we find the Navi says, Shimu Nazois Roshe Beis Yaakov, listen to this, please, the heads of the house of Yaakov, Oktsine Beis Yisrael, and leaders of the house of Yisrael, Hamasavim Mishael, in general, Yaakov and Yisrael. Yaakov refers to the simple people, Yisrael refers to the people on the higher level. So the leaders of both groups, anyway, Hamasavim Mishpat, they consider justice to be disgusting. They call it Yishara Yaakeshu. Everything that's supposed to be straight, they make crooked. So they're judging wrongly and perversely. Uchtim, and the next passage continues, Boinat Sion B'damim B'gamer. These are people who build Sion with blood. and so forth. So again, in other words, they're paskening in dine Torah wrongly, and therefore causing that people are losing money inappropriately. And that money, after all, could have been used for people to buy food for themselves. So therefore, it comes out that that indirectly they're spilling blood. And he continues, Rasher b'sheichad yishpoitu. The heads over there, the leaders, are judging based on sheichad. They take bribes and then they judge. The Kohanim, who are supposed to be teaching Torah to the Jewish people, are doing it only for payment. Where the Gemara tells us in Nedarim that in particular Torah Shabbat Peh, you're not even supposed to take payment for teaching it. And the Nevi'im, the false Nevi'im, that is, are doing magic for money, that people pay them money and they do magic for them and claim that it's Nevuah from Hashem. And then the pasuk continues, they rely on Hashem and they say Hashem is among us and no evil will befall us. So meaning Rishoyim, hey, meaning these people were Rishoyim in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, but they put their trust in Hashem. They trusted that Hashem is not going to punish them because his Shechina is among them and his Beis Mikdash is among them, and therefore that they're safe.
Is the generation that we're in right now considered Soros Rabos?
I guess in a, maybe it kind of does. Yeah. So, yeah. We have to realize also, of course, there can be, you know, when we talk about the Shoichad Yishpoitu and the Mechir Yodu and so forth, there can of course be many different levels. And then we have, for example, the Gemara in Ksubas tells us of Chachamim, who, for example, it says over there about Shmuel, for example, that one time there was a feather on his coat and somebody brushed it off. And Shmuel said that I'm not going to judge your din Torah because I'm going to be a little partial towards you. You wouldn't be required Me'ikar Adin to do that. Me'ikar Adin, that wouldn't be considered the kind of favor that would make him biased, but he was being machmir on himself. So when the Navi is talking about this, and when the Gemara is talking about this, we're not necessarily talking about people who are taking blatant shoichad. We could be talking about people who are not being careful about the to this extra degree, for example, and so forth with the other ones. Anyway, so the Fichach, so because they did these three things wrong, that was saying the Rosheha and Koyhaneha and Vieha, that each of them are acting wrongly, therefore, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu HaLem, Shloisha Puranias connected Shloisha Averis Riyadim. Therefore, the Navi continues that Hashem is going to bring three punishments on them corresponding to the three things that they did wrong. Because you have they're taking Shoichad and taking payment for teaching Torah and taking payment for doing magic, therefore, there's going to be three punishments. That's how Rashi learns. Marsha explains differently. We just said that they just said they trusted in Hashem, which means, in other words, with all of their averus, they still have the quality of bitachon in Hashem, which is a very important thing. Therefore, in other words, so without that, if they hadn't had that bitachon, they would have deserved total destruction because after all, they had that bitachon. Therefore, Marsha said that mitigate what the Gemara is saying, and the Navi that they explain in the Navi is that Hashem mitigated the punishment instead of making it total. Instead, Hashem brought on them three specific punishments, so the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, as we're going to, Yerushalayim was destroyed, and so forth, as he's going to go on to say, but there wasn't a total destruction by fire that they might have been otherwise. The fact that they had Bitachon saved them from that. As the Navi continues, L'chein b'glauchem tzion sodas echadosh, therefore, because of you, Sion, which is the special part of Yerushalayim, where the Talmid Chachamim live in particular, Soda Sechodesh is going to be plowed up like a field. The Yerushalayim ENT, the city of Yerushalayim, will be mounds, will be heaps of ruins. The Harabais, the Vomis Yar, and the Harabais will be a high place with a forest on it. So those are the three things. So in fact, Marsha says each one of them actually indicates that there's not a total destruction. When we say that Sion Soda Sechorish, it's going to be plowed like a field, but that implies a field, after all, is a place that can be cultivated. You can grow something there. Yerushalayim Iyantiyah means, in other words, but there's still it's going to be destroyed, but there's still going to be heaps of wounds over there. It's not going to be destroyed like Sodom was. And the same thing, Harabais, the Vomis Yar, same thing. In other words, that we're not talking about by Sodom, it was completely destroyed. All the vegetation and everything was turned upside down. Here, you're not going to have that. Why? Because at least they had Betochen and Hashem. There's something similar, actually. There's a sikha that Rebbe talks about. You have the famous story at the end of Makkos where the three Chachamim are Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Akiva come to the Harabais, and they see a fox running around over there, and they start crying, and Rabbi Akiva is laughing, and so forth. And he quotes this pasuk. So there's a sikha where the Rebbe talks about that Rabbi Akiva based partially on this Marashah over here, that Rabbi Akiva was explaining to them that the Churban is actually something from which something much greater will grow later on, and therefore, yes, of course, we tear our clothes about it. Rabbi Akiva did also in that Gemara, but nevertheless, we should also realize that there's a greater future that's going to come from it, like Marashah is saying over here, something that's going to grow from that root, from that field. And the Gemara continues. The Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mashu Shchinosei Av Yisrael Ad Sheyichlu Shoftim V'Shoyter Roim Miyisrael. Hashem will not make a Shchina rest on the Jewish people until the bad judges and Shoyterim, which are the bailiffs, the ones who carry out the orders of the Beis Din, until the bad ones among those are gone from among the Jewish people. Shenemar, as Yeshaya says, V'Ashiva Yodi Alayich. I'll bring back my hand over you. In other words, to remove the people who shouldn't be there. The etzrif kabursi and valshiva yodi alayach also means I'll return my shechina upon you. A yodi means literally my place. So it means, in other words, that Hashem is saying I'll return my shechina on you. The etzrif kabursi goyach, I will clean up your dregs, like with soap, like as if like you take soap and wash away all the filth, the same way all of that will be washed away. I'll remove all of your bedil, where in the simple sense, bedil means tin, like you have tin mixed in with precious metal, but it also means those who separate, those who make Abdullah between the Jewish people and Hashem. And then he continues, and I'll restore your judges like they were originally, and your advisors like they were at the beginning. And then, as the pasuk continues, then you'll be called Ir HaTzedek, a place that's fit for the Shechina to rest. So we see that as once the dregs and the dirt and whatever are removed, the sigoyich and bedilayich, then it'll be time for it to be Ir HaTzedek. So in this connection, the Gemara says, "Amar Ula in Yerushalayim niftes ela b'tzedakah. Yerushalayim will be redeemed only with tzedakah." Shenemar, the next pasuk there continues, "Tzion memishpati poda v'shaveha b'tzedakah." Tzion will be redeemed with justice, and those who return to it will be redeemed with tzedakah. On the side of it, it brings that the Rambam has the girsa. Famously, we know there's a famous expression, "Ein Yisrael nigalon ela b'tzedakah." You actually don't find that lashon in the Gemara anywhere, but the Rambam had that. The Rambam brings that in Hilchos Matnas Aniyim. Apparently, that was his girsa in the Gemara. Not "Ein Yerushalayim niftes ela b'tzedakah," but "Ein Yisrael niftin ela b'tzedakah." And that's where we got the popular expression, "Ein Yisrael nigalon ela b'tzedakah." In fact, this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin. Marashah wonders Taka about over there if we're saying, what do you mean, "Ein Yerushalayim niftes ela b'tzedakah"? We're saying on the pasuk of Yitzian will be redeemed through mishpat. Only shaveha will be through tzedakah. But now, when you have the Rambam's girsa that says "Ein Yisrael niftin ela b'tzedakah," well, then that answers the question very neatly. So the Gemara continues in this connection. Amar Papa, I batli yehiri. When the Yehiri, Jews who act in a very proud, gaivadik way, Rashi explains, they wear their hair long, they wear fancy clothing like goyish and knights. So when those are gone from the Jewish people, bat the amgushi, then the amgushi, which is the goyim, Rashi says over here at Tzedukin, that seems to be changed by the censors, the goyim who hate us and harass us will also be gone. And ibatli daini, when the bad dayonim, who, as we said before, are corrupt, when those are gone, then batli gzirpati, then the gzirpati will be gone, which means Rashi says police, goyisha policemen who harass us and then cause us a lot of trouble. What's the connection? Ibatli yehiri batli amgushi dichtiv. The pasuk that we just quoted before says the etzrich kabur sigoyich for goymer. Hashem says, I will take away your sigoyich, your dregs, like with soap. And the word sigoyich, Rashi explains, is related to the word yisgemaod, which means to grow very great. So these are people who act in a very great, proud way and act in proud goyish style. So when they're gone, Then when they're gone, then you also have then vasir kol b'di loich. Then you have the goyim who try to separate us from Hashem will be gone as well. That's the amgushim who try to convert Jews to their religion. And bat the daini bat the gzirpati dichtiv. You have a pasuk heiser Hashem meshpatayich. Hashem has removed your judges, your judgments, meaning the bad judgments. Pina oivech, and he took away your enemies. So once the bad dayanim are gone, then so are the goyish police and whatever who harass us. Marshov there explains in Sanhedrin, the vote is also the Yehiri, he says, besides what Rashi is saying over here, that the Yehiri are people who imitate Goyish styles, it also means people who act in a hypocritical way. It means people who make themselves, who pretend that they're better than they are. Well, the Goyim many times do that as well. They claim to be all moral and righteous or whatever, and meanwhile they do all kinds of disgusting things. So when the Yehiri are gone from among the Jewish people, then so will the hypocritical Goyim who pretend to be on the side of everything that's right and good, and really they're anything but.
Yeah, they dress up and fake.
Yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Go'ola. Test Zion 7. So we started talking about yesterday that Eber had brought the point about Nevuah, that there were the Nevi'im of the Baal Shem Tov and the Mizrach Magid who had Nevuah and the later Rebbeim. Now the Rambam goes on and explains in Sefer Amada that one of the basics of Yiddishkeit is to know that Hashem gives Nevuah to people and you have the mitzvah to listen to another. So we have to know, therefore, the halacha that exists even nowadays, before the Gola, that there exists the concept of a revelation of a Nevuah, that Mashiach will have that even before the Gola, and it's a me'ein, it's the beginning of the complete revelation of Nevuah after Gola. In fact, we also have that Amram goes on to say that a Novi doesn't even have to always give an ois for Pella to show that he's a Novi. If another Novi testifies about him, that he's a Novi. And you have, for example, in this case, you have about Nesida Reinu, about the Friedrich Rebbe, and about our Rebbe, and continued afterwards through his Talmidim, then he's Bechezkas Novi. And the Rambam says, you don't have to check into him. So therefore, you need to listen to him even before he does an ois. And as the Rambam goes on to say, you're not even allowed to question whether his Nevuah is true or not, or to test him as more, or to test him too much. You have to realize that Hashem is within him and not start questioning and not second guessing. Because Hashem is with those Nevi. Continuing on halachas of maso mata, of honest business dealings. Suppose you have a person is planning to buy something or rent something, whether land, whether metaltalim, whether from a goy or whether from a yid, and they already decided on a price. Now, before they made the official kinyan, somebody else came and bought or rented that thing, then that second person is called a rosh. However, the Alter Rebbe adds the detail. Now, if you have, for example, if he's buying it at a discounted price where he couldn't have found it for that price anywhere else, then he's not called a rosha for that because he is entitled to take advantage of that. But otherwise, the fact that the first person was already on the verge of getting it, then that's but if they hadn't yet made up a price, they're still bargaining over it, then somebody else is allowed to buy it. Now, you also have the din in that connection that you're not allowed to encroach on somebody else. Somebody is renting houses or whatnot from a goy, even if they didn't actually make up a price yet. You're not allowed to interfere with that and try to encroach on his line of business over there.